This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
Well, hello again. I sometimes think that December is probably the best month of the year during which to observe the heavens, because we get obviously very long nights, the longest we have throughout the year, and it gives us a chance to see two lovely areas of the sky, one early in the evening and one later on. And one first very beautiful area is the region around Cygnus, Lyra and Aquila, with the three stars that actually make up what's called the summer triangle, because they're visible in the summer as well. I've talked about that area in detail in some of the earlier early autumn jodcasts. So perhaps if you want to learn more about that part of the sky, which you can see fairly high in the west after sunset, then have a listen to one of the ones for a month or so ago. But then as the night moves on, we see the second wonderful area of sky, which is really centered on the constellation of Orion the Hunter. The three stars that make up his belt make lovely pointers. Down to the lower left is the constellation of Canis Major with its bright star Sirius. Sirius is very bright, the brightest star we see in the northern sky. It's also obviously very low, not very far above the horizon for us up in the north of England particularly. And as a result, it tends to scintillate quite a lot, and the light gets refracted through the Earth's atmosphere and breaks up into colours. So quite often you actually see it almost dancing about in flashes of red and blue. And quite often at Jodrell Bank we get rung up by people wondering what it is they've seen. Well, it's an effect of the atmosphere of the Earth on those nights when the stars seem to twinkle a lot. If you move up to the right of Orion, following those three stars, you come to the region of Taurus, the constellation Taurus, which has got two lovely clusters in it. First of all, moving up to the right from Orion, we have the Hyades cluster. At its heart is apparently a very bright star called Aldebaran, or Aldebaran, some people might call it, an orange giant star. In fact, it forms the eye of Taurus the Bull, and the Hyades cluster make up the V-shaped face. In fact, Aldebaran is not part of the Hyades cluster. It's only about halfway between us and the cluster, and whereas all the cluster stars are moving over to the left in the sky, Aldebaran is moving southwards, so they're quite separate. But that's a very nice little region to look at. If you follow up higher in the sky, still in the same direction, you come to that most beautiful little cluster called the Pleiades cluster. Sometimes called the Seven Sisters. In fact, if you look there, you don't tend to see seven stars with your unaided eye. I can see five, but if you can see more than five, you probably see nine. But perhaps that's got the parents as well. Lovely thing to look at in binoculars. It really is, all with a small telescope. Some beautiful little stars there. One of the bright stars has a little triplet of stars close by, and that looks very sweet. And to the right of that, with a telescope, you see a little double star system where the upper right of the pair is a beautiful deep red colour. Very, very obvious colour contrast there. Up to the left of Orion, we have the heavenly twins Gemini. Over to the left, you've got, below Gemini, is Canis Minor, almost just one star visible, Procyon. And then above Orion, coming up along the band of the Milky Way, in fact, is Auriga, with its bright yellow star Capella, which can be almost overhead at an appropriate time in the night. Because it's in the plane of the Milky Way, there are many star clusters there, and M37, 38, and 36, I think, are three of the ones that you pick out with binoculars fairly easily. So a very rich part of the sky to observe. So do enjoy some of the clear nights we have this month. Obviously, when the moon is not around, you can see fainter objects. Well, what about the planets? It's not a brilliant month for planets, but it's actually quite an interesting one. Jupiter, we've been seeing that fairly low in the south for quite a few months now. That's really low down in the southwest as nightfall begins. It's actually to the left of the teapot. Those are the stars that make up the constellation Sagittarius, although because they're low down, they're not at all obvious to us up in the north of England. It's about 34 arc seconds across, so a small telescope will certainly show details on the surface. At magnitude minus 2, it's still pretty bright. it's fading very slightly, but not a lot during the month. During the month of December, it will gradually be lost in the sun's glare, but nevertheless, we'll still be able to see it, and there are a couple of nice highlights that I'll come to very shortly. Jupiter's now at the lowest point in the ecliptic, and that means it doesn't rise to very high elevation. It's never been more than about 15 or so degrees above our southern horizon in England, and that means, of course, we're looking at it through a fairly thick atmosphere, which does rather blur the view. Gradually over the next few years, it'll work its way up from that bottom point in the ecliptic, and our views will be better. Well, Saturn is now a morning object, but in fact rising in the east, in fact before midnight, probably best seen in a couple of hours or so before dawn. Well, it's fairly high in the southern sky, and it's at magnitude 1. Now, that's not an awful lot, certainly less than normal, because at this time, the rings of Saturn are closing. Our view of Saturn is such that the rings are going to become edge-on in not too many months, and there's only about 4 degrees angle between us and the plane of the rings, so they're obviously not reflecting nearly as much light as usual. It's still, however, a very beautiful planet to observe. Mercury. This comes and goes quite quickly because it whips around the sun in only 88 days, and it's going to become visible again during the last week of December. And as we shall see later, it actually meets with Jupiter on December the 28th. Because it's low in the sky, binoculars tend to be an aid to see it. Although its magnitude of minus 0.7 is actually slightly brighter than Saturn at the moment. So when you do see it, it is actually fairly obvious. At the moment, Mars is actually so close to the sun, we can't see it. It's gone round the back. So we have to wait a few more months before that becomes visible in the morning. Venus, that is becoming more apparent as time goes by. It's now seen low in the west after sunset, shining at magnitude minus 4.2, and Venus is in fact the brightest of the planets that we see in the sky. So you can easily see it without binoculars. I picked it up quite easily just the other night. Now, over this year, it's tended to be what's called rather low declination. It's lower in the heavens than the sun, and that means that it hasn't been rising to very high elevation. That's beginning to change, and so over the next few months we will see Venus far more prominent in the evening sky than we've seen it, in fact, throughout the whole of this year. Again, there's going to be a nice little highlight later this month. As the month goes by, the angular size, if you look at it with a small telescope, is increasing. It's getting nearer to us. It goes from 16 to 19 or so arc seconds. At the same time, the area of the surface that we see illuminated is reduced because it's coming nearer to us. It's like when the moon has a thinner and thinner crescent. Interestingly, the effect of getting larger and the effect of having a smaller area illuminated means that that cancels out, and the brightness of Venus stays pretty well constant at about magnitude minus 4.2 or so for several months at a time. So it's a very nice prominent planet to see. So let's move on to some of the highlights of the month. On December the 29th, there's a nice lineup of the planets with the thin crescent moon. You've got Venus, Jupiter, and Mercury all lined up with the moon. So that'll look very nice just before and after sunset. But also, it so happens that Neptune is actually only 2.5 degrees away from Venus that night, and that would give you a good chance to try and spot it. If you put Venus on the left-hand side of the field of a pair of binoculars, Neptune at shining at magnitude 8, so that should be visible if it's reasonably dark by then, will be up to the right of Venus. If you go to the night sky webpage, just put night sky into Google, it's on the Jodrell Bank website, I've actually put a little finder chart for Neptune. And of course, although Venus will disappear from the field within a day or so, you can still find Neptune related to the star Delta Capricornus, which is at magnitude 2.9, I think, nearly third magnitude, which is just low and to the left of where Neptune is. So that gives you a chance to find Neptune. Now, in the mid-early evening, You have a chance again to see the Andromeda Galaxy, and I've talked about that quite a bit recently. But over to the left of Andromeda is the constellation of Perseus. And in Perseus, there's a rather interesting binary star system called Algol, sometimes called the Demon Star, because it appears to wink. Every couple of so days, 2.87 days to be precise, in fact, one of the stars, the less bright, becomes in front of the brighter star, and the brightness drops by around a magnitude. And that's really quite obvious. It just takes a few hours for the brightness to drop and then to rise again. Now, I've picked out a couple of times during December when you have a reasonable chance to see this. Ideally, you want to have a look at it in the evening. So if you found Algol, and I've put a little finder chart again on the Night Sky website, if you look out around 8:17, 2017 UT, on the 7th of December, 17:06, that should be after dark, on the 10th of December, and 18:50 on the 30th of December, around that time, you will actually see the brightness of Algol fade quite significantly and rise again. It is worth seeing sometimes Algol, the Demon Star, which is what is called an eclipsing binary. Now, usually in December, we tell you to look out for the Geminids, which is one of the most reliable of the meteor showers during the year. The trouble is, it's on the morning of December the 14th when we would have the chance of seeing it best. But sadly, the moon is just one day past full moon, and it's not very far away in the sky, which means its glare is going to obscure all but the very brightest of the Geminids. They're relatively slow-moving meteors, and some of them can be quite bright. They appear to come from a point that we call the radiant. It's where the meteors appear to come from, to arise from, which is actually close to the star Castor in the constellation of Gemini, hence the name the Geminids. Well, it might be worth having a look, but sadly this isn't going to be the best year to observe them. Thankfully, next year will be a lot better. Well, there's a lot to see this month. I hope I haven't gone too long. But before I leave, can I just say something for those of you who listened? Thank you very much to our Jodcast, who are in the Southern Hemisphere. And obviously we tend to miss you out. I just would like to say something which I think will also be an interest to people who live in the Northern Hemisphere. Because one of the nice things to see in the evening in the Southern Hemisphere at the present time, let's say about 9 or 10 o'clock, looking to the south, fairly high up, to the left you have one of the brightest stars in the sky, which is called Canopus, and over to the right you have the star Achernar, which is not quite as bright as Canopus, but not far off. If you look below those two in the sky, and still pretty high up, we have nearer Canopus what is called the Large Magellanic Cloud, and just below Achernar towards the horizon, the Small Magellanic Cloud. These are the actual third and fourth nearest galaxies to us in the heavens. They're not that far away. They're about 160,000 light years from us. They're separated by 21 degrees in the sky, about 75,000 light years apart. There are actually two small dwarf galaxies which are nearer. The Large Magellanic Cloud is actually the fourth largest galaxy in what we call our local group of galaxies. We're number two, the Milky Way is number two. The Andromeda Galaxy is the largest, the granddaddy of them all, and then the third largest is M33, which is in Triangulum, much smaller than either Andromeda or our own Milky Way. Number four comes in is the Large Magellanic Cloud. It is classed as an irregular galaxy, but there's quite a strong bar, and one suspects it probably would have been a barred spiral in the past, but interactions both with the Small Magellanic Cloud and also our own Milky Way have tended to sort of upset its shape. It does have one of the largest star formation regions that we know of. It's called 30 Doradus, or the Tarantula Nebula, which is sort of up to the left in most of the photographs. And because there are lots of stars being born there, there's a reasonable chance that some of them might blow up. And I'm sure many of you in the Southern Hemisphere who have been around for a while will know that in 1987, we saw a supernova in the Large Magellanic Cloud. In fact, the first one we've seen anywhere nearby for several hundred years. So it's quite a nice object to look at. Now, it was thought for a long time that these were sort of daughter galaxies of our own Milky Way. They were orbiting the Milky Way galaxy. Now, if that is the case, from the speeds at which they're moving and how far they are away from us, one can calculate the mass of the Milky Way. But this began to become rather embarrassingly high, as though, in fact, the mass of our own Milky Way galaxy was greater than that of the Andromeda galaxy, which is not what we really thought. It now appears, from even later measurements showing their speed and velocities through space, their directions as well, that they're actually just bypassing the Milky Way. They're not locked to us, they're just going past, and they will hence in the future disappear from our view, but obviously not in any timescale that we humans are worried about. So there you are, two very nice objects to see in the southern sky. If you've got binoculars and you look at the Small Magellanic Cloud, you should see quite a bright fuzzy object, very close indeed. That is what is called a globular cluster. It's called 47 Tucani. And at its heart, the stars are very, very tightly packed. It's one of the densest concentrations of stars that we know of. And that is one of the brightest of the so-called globular clusters. Their spherical distribution of stars, they date back from the origin, really, of our galaxy. And they're like sort of little miniature spherical galaxies, maybe up to a million stars. So have a look out for 47 Tucani as well. Well, I hope that gives those of you who live in the Southern Hemisphere something to look at. A few years ago, I did co-author a book called Pocket Guide to Stars and Planets. It's available on Amazon. And I tried to treat the Southern Hemisphere on an equal basis with the Northern Hemisphere. So all of the quarterly star charts are there twice. One of them's upside down, especially for you. And there's a list of quite a number, about 50-odd objects in the sky, including some of the best objects to observe from the Southern Hemisphere. I call it the Astronomical A-List. And at least 15 of those are things that we can't see from our northern skies. But hopefully, it's only about £9 or £10. It's not terribly expensive. It would give you a lead as to some of the nice things to look at in your lovely southern skies. I'm going to be down with you before long. Hopefully I'm going to have a lovely look of those Magellanic clouds in just a few weeks.